Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's March 31, 2014, and this is episode 414. After many moons, finally today I'm going to bring you my Canon EF 200-400mm f4L EXD 1.4x lens review. This is obviously the lens with the 1.4x extender built in. As you may recall, I bought this lens back in June 2013 as I was able to get a good deal on some old gear that I sold to pay for it. I've dragged my feet on this review though because I wanted to really take the lens through its paces first, and having now used it for some heavy wildlife shooting almost every day from the end of January until February, the end of February this year, I'm now full of stuff that I want to tell you. Before we start, I'd like to just set expectations for this review. Although I sometimes do in-studio tests for my cameras and sometimes lens reviews, the 200-400mm lens is predominantly a wildlife and sports lens to be used mainly in the field, so that's what I've based this review on. Real world, in the field, wildlife photography. I'm not going to be doing lab tests as to me how this lens handles, and the results that it produces in the field are the most important aspects. Having said that, there were a few times when I tried something specific in the field, knowing that it's the sort of thing that you might be interested in hearing about. Also, before I get you too excited about this lens, know that it's expensive. I literally had to sell my old 300mm f2.8, my 6mm f4 and 135mm f2 lenses and my old Canon 1DS Mark III to cover the cost of this lens. As of March 2014, this lens is currently running at $11,299 on B&H, so it's definitely up there with the most expensive glass on the market. Whether it's worth this much is for you to decide. Personally, I think it is, or I wouldn't have bought it. And my positioning has only been reinforced by actually using the lens. One of the reasons this lens is so expensive, but what makes it so versatile, is the built-in 1.4x extender. This is a revolutionary innovation by Canon that really took the industry by storm when it was announced almost 2 years before the lens actually went on sale. As you can see in this photo, the lens bulges out to the side to house the extender when it's not engaged, and a simple lever-style switch is there just to engage or disengage it. If you're subscribed to this podcast on an iPhone or iPad, then you can actually check out the images, see what we're talking about as we move through this, as long as you're subscribed to the enhanced version of the podcast. If you're not, and you can't see the images now, go over to the blog at mbp.ac/414 and you'll be able to click on the images. And this is going to be especially important when we start to look at some 100% crops of the photos, just to see how sharp and high quality the images are as we move through the rest of this podcast. The action of the switch to engage the 1.4x extender is well balanced and it can be flicked up easily and quickly. In practice, although I initially fumbled trying to find the switch in a moment of fast-paced shooting, once you get used to it, it really feels well positioned and can be flicked on or off very easily. The amazing thing about having this extender built in like this is that we no longer have to unmount the lens from the camera to put on or remove an extender to obtain your required focal length. Essentially, you can zoom from 200 to 400 millimeters, and then if you need the extra reach, you just flick a switch and you're at 560 millimeters. If necessary, of course, you can then pull back a little bit, and although you'd ideally only pull back to an effective focal length of 400 millimeters and not right back to 280, the widest focal length of the lens with the extender engaged, in practice, I found myself pulling back past 400mm a number of times. Although I'm mindful of this and try to disengage the extender when I don't need it, As we'll see, the image quality is unchanged with the extender engaged, so I let the shooting situation decide how I work with the lens. If I'm photographing birds in flight at a distance, I'm more likely to leave the extender engaged until the bird gets really close, and then I disengage it to pull back further. Anyway, let's take a look at some shots from the 200 to 400mm so that you can see why I'm head over heels with this little beauty. First is a photograph of 9 red crown cranes in flight, made at 400mm without the internal 1.4x extender engaged. This is an uncropped 18 megapixel file from the Canon EOS 1DX. And so that you can see just how detailed and sharp this image is, here's a crop at 100% of the 2 cranes to the right of the group. If you're looking at this directly on the blog post, remember that this will be resized in the embedded format on the blog, so you'll need to click on it to view the full-sized image. Open your browser out a little bit. It's 1440 pixels wide. So open your browser out a little bit and then just click on it and you'll see the full-sized image at 100%. For a more close-up view of the sharpness, let's also look at a crop from this photo, which is a Stellar Seagull flying straight towards me. This was shot at 386mm, so pull back just slightly, and this is the 100% crop. I hope this is coming across in these examples, because when I first saw the detail in these images, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I'm used to seeing sharp images. I know you want to see what the images look like with the 1.4x extender engaged though, so let's look at a few more examples. Here is a photo of a black kite shot at 560mm with the 1DX. This is a slight crop along the right and the bottom sides, but otherwise has had just 12 clarity added in Lightroom and nothing else. It's straight out of the camera otherwise. And here is the 100% crop. Remember, this is with the 1.4x extender engaged and at the full reach of 560mm. This photo just blows me away, so I hope that you're now starting to understand why I've fallen in love with this lens. And I just have to share this shot with you too, as it blew me away. Here's a photo of a Stellar Seagull at 526mm, so just pull back a little bit again. And here's the 100% crop of his head. This one really gave me goose pimples. Straight out of the camera, I didn't have to add any clarity or anything, it's just straight out of the camera. One of the first things that I checked when I first heard of this lens was if it was possible to add an external extender as well as engaging the internal extender, and I was pleasantly surprised to hear that you could. At the full extent, of course, this takes the focal length from 560mm to 784. As an example, I shot this photo of an Ural Owl with the 5D Mark III, so I had slightly more resolution at 22 megapixels, more than the 18 megapixels of the 1DX. And here is a 100% crop. I'm sure you'll agree that although the image quality isn't stunning anymore, it's still very acceptable. I shot this image on the first of my 2 tours using a monopod at f9 for 800th of a second at ISO 800, as it was overcast on this day. On my second tour, I decided to try a few other combinations, and luckily the Ural Owl was there again, so we have the same subject for our comparison, although it was a clearer day this time. In this example, I had both the internal 1.4x extender engaged and an external 2.0x extender, taking the focal length to a whopping 1,120mm. And here is what I would consider a very acceptable quality image at 100%. It's not world-beating clarity, of course, but if you really need to this amount of reach, it's one way to get it. Now, remember that as you add extenders, your widest aperture becomes smaller. The lens drops from f4 to f5.6 when you engage the internal extender, but then it drops two more stops from 5.6 through f8 to f11 when you add the 2x extender, which costs you two more stops, of course. I shot this at f11, the widest aperture possible, again at ISO 800 at a 500th of a second. I was using a monopod here too. Note too that you lose autofocus with this combination because your aperture is lower than f8, the smallest aperture that the 1DX will focus at, or autofocus at. Still though, I'm really impressed with the image quality here, especially when you consider that it's shot at 1,120mm. There was one more surprise waiting for me though. While I had the 2x extender fitted, I made a few images without the internal extender engaged to see what the image quality is like. Note too that the 2x extender takes you to 800mm at f8, whereas the internal at 1.4x extender and an external extender, 1.4x extender, only takes you to 784mm. So here's first the full image at 800mm. And this is the 100% crop. This to me actually looks sharper than when I used both the internal 1.4x extender and an external 1.4x extender. So this is something that I'll definitely be bearing in mind when I do need the extra reach of an external extender. The downside of using this combination, of course, is that it stops me from zooming out to 280mm. My shortest focal length would be 400mm, but if I need the reach, this is definitely an option. Also, of course, although I'd lose autofocus, I would have the option to zoom out to 1,120 with the internal extender if I really needed to. In hindsight, I probably should have also tried the lens with both the internal and external extenders fitted and shooting moving subjects, but I never actually felt the need for the extra reach on my two recent Winter Wonderland trips. When the need arises, I'll let you know how the autofocus bears up to this, you know, this scenario at some point in the future. Another thing that I know some people are waiting to hear about is how the 200 to 400mm lens fares with the 5D Mark III. Image quality isn't an issue, but I found that the autofocus performance for moving subjects drops considerably. It often takes much longer to achieve initial focus, and then also when tracking with birds in flight, it's much more likely to lose focus for a while before regaining it, or losing it altogether until you stop focusing and then refocus. The 1DX will occasionally lose focus during a set, but it's much less likely to do so. And when it does, it pretty much always recovers pretty quickly without any user intervention, so you don't have to stop focusing and then restart. I had some sets of images of eagles flying straight towards the camera where the focus was just off by about the same amount for the entire set. And although this sometimes happened with the 1D Mark IV too, it just doesn't happen anymore with the 1DX. The 5D Mark III isn't unworkable, but I shot the middle of 3 days of sea eagles on my second Winter Wonderland tour this year with the 5D Mark III, with almost identical weather conditions on all 3 days, and the difference was significant. As I was going through my images after the tour, I couldn't figure out why I was missing so many shots. And then I realized that I was looking at the day when I'd switched cameras. When I started to go through my images from the following day, having switched back to the 1DX, it was like a breath of fresh air. The images were just so much more consistently sharp. As I say though, the 5D Mark III and the 200 to 400mm lens combination is not unworkable. Here's an example of a shot made at 371mm of a Stella Sea Eagle coming straight for the camera. And here's the 100% crop of just the eagle's face for comparison. As you can see, when you nail the focus, the results are great. But you'll nail focus on fast-moving subjects with far less frequency than you will with the 1DX. This is a shame, really, as sometimes I like to forfeit the 12 frames per second that the 1DX gives me for a little extra resolution. But unless Canon release a firmware update to greatly improve the AI servo focusing on the 5D Mark III, I think I'll stick with the 1DX when using this lens, for this kind of fast-moving subject at least. I know that there's a big price difference between the 5D and the 1DX, so maybe you don't want to rule it out. The 5D Mark III is still an incredible all-round camera and often my go-to body. If you don't shoot fast-paced wildlife or sports, the 5D Mark III works fine with the 200-400mm, so it may still be an option. Indeed, I used this combination a number of times throughout my 2014 tours and was only dissatisfied with the autofocus or the AI servo tracking ability with the 5D Mark III when shooting these eagle shots. So, what other considerations might you want to bear in mind before taking the plunge on a big lens like this? Well, exactly that. It is a big chunk of glass, weighing in at 3,620 grams, which is a hair under 8 pounds. Without getting into a discussion about downsizing to a mirrorless camera system, though, the weight doesn't really bother me, because this lens enabled me to replace my 300mm and 600mm lenses, which at 2,550 grams and 5,360 grams respectively, totals 7,910 grams or 17.5 pounds. So I'm now carrying a wider focal length range for less size and weight, so I'm happy. After my old monopod broke many years ago, I didn't replace it because I didn't really want to, I didn't use it that often. Having tried to handhold my 200-400mm lens initially, I thought it would be too heavy, so I picked up a new Really Right Stuff monopod for these recent tours. It had been my intention to use the monopod on the boat from which we photographed the sea eagles. I'd taken the monopod on board on the first day and didn't use it. There just really isn't enough room, and I felt that it would actually hinder my movement. But I was also pleasantly surprised to find that this lens actually is hand-holdable, although you do feel it in your arms and shoulders after a while. There was actually a young lady on the tour that's probably half my size, and she was hand-holding the 200-400mm too. So it's not just a man thing, it seems to be doable. I haven't abandoned the monopod altogether either. It's getting used, just not for all of the in all of the ways that I imagined it would be. In the past, I've had to take my 600mm in a different bag, because my main Gura Gear Butterfly 32-litre backpack was already full with. I'd got the 300mm in there, the 70-200mm in there, and a range of other lenses. But now I can fit my entire wildlife and landscape kit into the Butterfly 32-litre, as we can see in this photograph. In fact, the 200-400mm lens fits comfortably down one side of the Butterfly 26-litre backpack. So if I leave a couple of lenses, say for example my macro and 14mm prime lens at home, the rest of my gear still fits in the other side. So this kit is actually incredibly portable. So it's another consideration when thinking about this lens. It of course really helps when travelling by air, especially as the airlines are gradually tightening their baggage restrictions. Also, because it's smaller than the 600mm, I've not been using my Really Right Stuff long lens support with this lens. Although I'm sure it will help to keep things nice and tight when shooting down at around a hundredth of a second or so, you know, that's kind of a dead zone. I was also though shooting images at 10 seconds, like this one, and they were sharp as tacks too, so I'm not going to be taking that long lens support with me anymore either, and this just really helps to keep my overall travel weight down, so this is a real welcome change. I did replace the lens collar foot with the Really Right Stuff replacement, which I have to say is not one of their most beautiful creations. The replacement foot for the original 600mm IS, not the Mark II, the original one, was nicely formed, but the 200-400mm replacement foot isn't pretty. It's functional and well engineered, as of course, as you can see in this photo. It just isn't the prettiest foot that they've made. If you are wondering why I replaced the foot that comes with the lens, this is because the Really Right Stuff replacement foot has an Arca Swiss style dovetail plate built in, and that allows the lens to sit lower down in a gimbal head, which makes it easier to balance the lens and the camera. Without the replacement foot, you of course have to add a lens to the bottom of the foot, and that's a big foot that comes with the lens as well, so it all adds up. Although I mentioned hand-holding this lens earlier and the monopod, when it's possible to use a tripod, it's definitely better, especially when you're shooting for any length of time. Plus, if you're shooting a moving subject like birds in flight, a gimbal head or at least a sidekick is the way to go. Trying to track with a moving subject and keep your camera straight with a ball head is just not an option. I've seen people do this, it just doesn't work. I recently switched from my old original Wimberly head to the Really Right Stuff PG-02 full gimbal head. The Wimberly is a great gimbal head, and I was happy with mine for many years, even though it was the original heavier head and not the slightly lighter Mark II version. But I'm so much happier with the Really Right Stuff. Not only can it be configured to use for shooting images to stitch together for panorama photos, as I explain in my latest ebook, Striking Landscapes, but as a gimbal head, it's simply a cut above the rest. One merit is that it can be broken down and stored more easily because it's a modular head, but also it has just the right amount of drag when tracking birds in flight. It actually feels almost like a fluid video head in use, which makes for a very smooth panning action. You can apply a bit of traction with the locking nuts on the Wimberly, but it's not as smooth as the RRS PG-02. For storage and transporting the RRS gimbal head, I'm using the Lenscote Really Right Stuff PG gimbal pouch, which holds all of the components that I need to build the full gimbal, and I can also fit the parts for my panorama stitching setup too. So this protects the head and keeps it all nicely organized. And note that all of these things that I'm talking about are linked from the website, from the blog post at mbp.ac/414. One last word on transporting the 200-400mm lens itself. The case that comes with it is, although very sturdy and protective, it's too big. It looks like Canon just reused the same outer shell as some of their bigger telephoto lenses with a different inner molding, and there's a lot of wasted space. As you can see in this last shot for this review, if they wanted to save money by using a larger case, they could have at least molded it in such a way that you could pack the camera, the lens, with a camera fitted to the body. But, you know, I mean, I don't like to do this because it can put a lot of stress on the mount if the bag is banged. But the point is, the case is just too big. It's big enough to actually do that. So, in conclusion, you know, that's my review on the 200-400mm f4 extender 1.4x lens. And as I say, I've tried to base this on my real-world experiences with the lens rather than indoor tests, which is why I waited until I was able to really use this lens for a full month on my two 2014 Japan Winter Wonderland tours. Many times I found myself giggling like a teenager at the sheer joy of being able to zoom again for the first time in probably 10 years now. For so long, I've been shooting wildlife with my prime lenses that I'd forgotten how much easier it is to use the, you know, when you've got the flexibility of a zoom lens. Having the ability to zoom from 200 millimeters through to 560 with the flick of a switch, knowing that the image quality is as good, if not better, than my old prime lenses, is revolutionary. There's a few downsides, but in many ways, the folks at Canon outdid themselves on this one. So that's it for this week. But before we finish, I've got a couple of tour and workshop updates for you. Remember, if you'd like to join us in Japan for the 2015 Winter Wonderland tours that I've mentioned a few times during this review, do take a look at the tour page at mbp.ac/ww2015, or sign up for our newsletters, then you'll get any new tour information as that's announced, and you can do that at mbp.ac/news. Also, note that I'm bringing back the Pixels to Pigment Printing and Digital Workflow Workshop with a small group in-studio workshop here in Tokyo. The first workshop is going to be held on May 17 and 18, 2014, this year, for a maximum of 5 participants, and everyone will be taking away either a large format print or a 20 by 30 inch gallery wrap, a canvas gallery wrap, courtesy of our friends over at Breathing Colour. We've already filled 2 places, so if you'd like to join us, please hurry. For details and to reserve your place, take a look at the new Pixels to Pigment page at mbp.ac/p2p. So that's P, the numeral 2, and then another P. So thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter, and Facebook. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. And in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.